This is Cinema Degeneration.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
I just can't take no pleasure in killing. Just some things you gotta do.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
You wanna know what happens to an eyeball when it gets punctured?
You just can't let them go?
Go!
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Please, God.
This. God.
The dead will walk here.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell.
It's alive!
They all flow down here.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Boy,
you're doomed.
On our show tonight, Howling Under the Full Moon, we will explore Charles Band's empire, Full Moon Entertainment. We've got trancers, sci-fi epics, and vampires all in one place. When you need a break from reality, let our host show you through the madhouse of killer bongs, psychopathic cookies, and maniacal puppets. Don't be a squid and join us in the fun.
Serena.
Hi.
Amber, come on in.
Cool space.
So why don't I show you around?
This is a pot-friendly household.
You're an artist, too. I Googled you. I know your work.
Wow.
This would be your room.
I'm definitely into it.
Did you hear that, baby? Can I get a recommendation from a previous landlord? Anyone who could vouch for you?
I promise I will be a good housemate. There
we are. Welcome to the hood.
Serena seems kind of weird, don't you think? Serena? Morning.
Oh my god.
And crawling into bed with you, I promise, is not going to be a regular thing. Unless you want it to be.
I'll take good care of your girl.
I see the way you look at her.
Don't be crazy.
Alrighty, folks and fellow cinema degeneration degenerates out there, welcome to another thrilling episode of Howling at the Full Moon, our all Charlie Band Empire Pictures Full Moon Entertainment podcast. And we have a newer addition to the festivities tonight. We are doing Don't Let Her In, directed by the one and only Ted Nicolau. From 2021. This is a shorty, and not a short film, but a short feature. It's just a little over 60 minutes long, but there's no shortage of entertainment here. And joining me, as always, is my trusty cohort in crime and co-confidant, Dustin Hubbard. How the hell are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing very well, thank you. Always happy to be on and talk some Nicolau.
Yeah, he is the man of the hour. I mean, with the Subspecies 5 finally, you know, being out of the bag.
Yeah, he's definitely a journeyman director, and he's definitely of the Full Moon family. He's one of the an actual auteur.
Yeah, and he's one of the few guys that has been around pretty much since the beginning and is still an ongoing part of the team, which I find amazing.
Absolutely, a welcome addition to the team.
But yeah, as much as I'd love to talk about Subspecies 5 right now, I'll try to stick everything to just Don't Let Her In. But yeah, it's going to be hard to not mention Subspecies 5 because we both know what a fucking masterpiece that movie is.
Yes, amazing movie.
Yeah, as we were saying off the air here, it just feels like a gift because it's something that probably, by all rights, should have had every strike against it not ever happening. But, you know, just goes to prove you never say never.
And I'll say this. I'll be the one with a kind of snotty attitude. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Most modern Full Moon fans didn't deserve that movie because they like to whine and complain about, like, oh, the stuff that's being made today, it doesn't compare to the Paramount era, wah, wah, wah. You know, and they like to be all bellyachy. And I'm like, you should just be grateful that they're still existing and they've been able to survive and continue to exist and thrive through rough patches, and they're still going strong, you know. So
yeah, it's still constantly putting out, you know, content no matter what,
because I know so many hardcore fans that are just, you know, so unnecessarily snooty about newer content, and it's like, you know, get over it, you know, be happy, you know. It's not, you're not going to love everything. I don't love everything. I'm like, you know, one of the number one Full Moon fans on the planet. There's a lot of stuff I'm not really a big fan of, you know, but
yeah, but you got to take the good with the bad and be thankful for when you get the good stuff.
Yeah. You know what? The good wouldn't exist without the bad, because you'd have no measuring stick for what's good and what's bad. So you need a little of both. So, you know, and Subspecies 5 is definitely much, much like most of Ted Nicolau's filmography, is definitely on the end of being great.
Yeah, and I think the same could be said about this movie. I'm not going to say I like Don't Let Her In as much as Subspecies 5, but it definitely has the, you know, it has all the things in it that I come to expect from a Ted Nicolau movie. It's shot very well. It's pretty to look at. It's a beautifully made film, edited very well. Great music, you know, and I could go on and on. But okay, we'll try. I'll try not to keep talking about Subspecies 5 because that's going to be really difficult here. But anyway, Don't Let Her In. I almost wanted to call it Don't Let, like, Why Would You Let Her In? But, you know, like we were talking off the air, they kind of ruined the title 5 minutes into the movie. So, but, you know, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. It should just be, she's in, you're fucked.
Yeah, that would have been, I think the movie probably would have done a lot better if it was just called that. You let her in, you're fucked.
And you know what? The title would work as a double entendre because you're fucked literally and figuratively.
right. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and get right off into it. I'll give you the quick, you folks at home, I'll give you the quick IMDb synopsis, which is as follows for Don't Let Her In 2021. When an attractive young couple rents out a room in their spacious loft to an eccentric, beautiful female artist, they soon live to regret it. Slowly but surely, their seductive new tenant invades their minds, their beds, and the very fabric of their lives. And for once, I feel like IMDb in their synopsis is right on the money. That is a legit synopsis. It doesn't beat around the bush.
Yeah, it's pretty on point.
Yeah, it's fairly accurate. And for, you know, it may seem very short, but then again, this movie is also very short. Like I said, it's like 61, 62 minutes long. It's got a great cast and crew. It's edited by Ted's son, Alex Nicolau. It's scored by Richard Band. It's got cinematography by Howard Wexler. So if you don't know who Howard Wexler is, folks, he's done so much Full Moon stuff. He's been a cinematographer in over 175 projects. Just look him up. You know, I could rattle off the titles that he's done. I mean, from the Evil Bong movies to even stuff like, you know, Puppet Master Axis Termination, Trophy Heads, Ginger Dead Man versus Evil Bong, and I'll just leave it at that. There's no shortage of stuff that this guy has worked on. And But yeah, I do love, I'm not sure what you think about the opening of this movie. I love the opening, like, first couple of minutes, because it's got a very, starts off looking very Sin City-ish, you know, yeah. With the
sequence.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, and it's not, I'm not saying this is a negative of the movie, but I kind of wish there was a little more of that, you know, in the transitions and stuff. But, you know, it's a very good for the opening title sequence, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it just, and I don't know about you, but like the whole idea, like I know in today's economy and today's landscape that you have to be more open to, you know, making ends meet and making your rent. So, but like, it just seems very odd to me to, you know, rent to somebody and like to have a roommate that you don't know. It just seems very odd to me. Like, I've never been into that position, you know, to take on a roommate that is just like, oh, I'm going to, you know, almost audition for interview for roommates. And it just seems like a weird concept to me. I'm not sure about you, but it does.
Yeah, I'm very untrusting, so I wouldn't want to just like let some random person move into my house. So I have too much expensive shit that I don't want just anyone to have access to.
Right. I'm just too private of a person to let somebody that are like, okay, I'm just going to be like having this rando person that I don't know. And I know they say people are, you know, strangers are just friends that you haven't met yet, but I'm old and set in my ways. I don't want to make new friends.
Exactly. I'm with you.
The first thing of any note that I have in this movie is our main character, played by Kelly Curran, who plays Amber. And her and Ben, who played by Cole Pendery, I think is how I pronounce his last name, Pendere. But Amber, you know, introduces Serena, is played by Lauren Doctor. She comes in, you know, and she looks very sleek. She looks very, just very svelte, very, you know, just very, just sleek, is for lack of a better term. She comes in. And this location is a really great location. It's got a lot of character to it. You know, I imagine they didn't have to do a lot of set decoration or art direction to it to make it look. Huh?
I had to look this location up. So I looked it up. It was actually shot at the Nate Starkman Building in Los Angeles. And it is it's a three-story building. That it was an old warehouse, I guess, and it's exclusively used for photo shoots and filming. So,
okay, that makes sense.
There'd been things from Columbo, Parks and Recreation, Repo Man, Ben Gates's apartment in National Treasure was shot there.
Oh, really? Yeah, I might have to revisit that one.
Stuff Date Night, Rising Sun. Color of Night. There a lot of films have shot in or around this location. Lovelace, Witchboard 2. So
yeah, so it's in heavy use.
Yeah, even music videos for Dramarama and Joni Mitchell have shot there. So it's a great location, and if you're talking Dramarama, that shit's been being used for decades.
You say Joni Mitchell? That
Yep, Joni Mitchell, Two Gray Rooms was shot there.
Yeah, I was going to say that's been in use since we've been around. Or I was going to say that's been in use since Christ was a kid.
Exactly. So, but great location. It's very visually appealing. It's kind of old world looking, but kind of has like, you know, I don't have the linguistic ability to kind of describe the design and architecture, but it's such a unique looking building because it's really aged and sort of dirty in some areas. Like when she shows Serena what her room would be, it's very like dirty and crusty looking, but still like neat and like, I don't know how to describe it. I probably sound stupid trying to describe it, but
yeah, well, I don't know much about architecture and stuff either, so I wouldn't know the correct terminology to use.
It's such a fascinating looking building, though, and their room is like their apartment is so huge. Like when she shows her what her room would be, it looks like the size of an apartment.
Yeah, it's like the size of a double wide, man.
So,
But one thing I got to mention here before I forget about it, because I didn't make a note about it, but I wanted to mention, was Amber's art when she's showing her, when she's showing Serena around.
Ironically making the movie posters for low budget horror movies.
Yeah, that she's using. Yeah, but she's making the cover for Corona Zombies.
I bet you didn't know that the girl from this designed that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Maybe, but she's actually a pseudonym for Ryan Brookhart. So that was him in disguise acting in this movie. So
that was a great wig, man.
Hey, the master of disguise, better than Dan.
But I love the fact like this comes back into play later on when Amber is showing her Serena the stop motion, because there's only four characters in this movie, folks listening at home. There's just the couple, Amber and Ben. There's our resident I'm going to spoil it here for you, but our resident demon Serena. And then there's little old Elias, not so little Elias, because he's like looks like he's almost like 7 foot fucking tall.
He looks like he should play like Tarzan or something.
Yeah. But yeah, he does. He kind of looks like he ought to play. He looks like, what's his name? The Kung Fu actor from the 80s, 90s, Joe Lara.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, Tarzan, totally. I totally see the Joe Lara. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here too. You ready for it?
Yeah.
Hair. He looks kind of like a handsome version of Weird Al.
Yeah, he does. A less dorky Weird Al.
Yeah, like the handsome model version of Weird Al with like the square jaw and the long curly fucking like Tarzan hair. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, all the Elias. That I'll get to that part when he gets introduced, the beef I have with his character.
His part is so minimal and incidental.
That's well, I'll talk about it now. That's the part, because we don't have to cover this in a linear kind of fashion. But, like, he's just a guy standing outside the apartment, outside the building, looking in through the window, or looking at the building, not even so much looking through the window. And he's just looking. 90% of it, he has like one scene of dialogue, and then like when he does, he gets unceremoniously like killed.
Yeah, he had the easiest role. So,
and how mad would have been if you were that actor? Which I look, his name is Austin James Parker. How mad would you be if you were him and you're like, you got the one scene, your big scene with dialogue, and then you're dead?
If it was in a Ted Nicolau movie, I'll take it. I don't care.
I'd have been 17th dead body from the left in a Ted Nicolau movie. I wouldn't give a damn.
It's like lift Serena's couch out of the fucking truck. If that's what it took to get in the movie, I would be all for it. So,
if it was like the last movie we reviewed, Murderbot, I would have been the guy standing in the with the black glasses and black hat, just standing in the background doing nothing.
Yeah, you'd have been the general's MIB, like, overseas.
Right. But I love this next part when Amber is showing Serena around the apartment and she's showing her the stop motion thing that she's working on. And she's like, salt is powerful. And I'm like, message? It's coming back.
Direct setup right here. It's like introducing a weapon. I mean, it literally is the same thing. It's like when you're watching a movie and they introduce like so-and-so has this big sword, or like there's a gun here, and it's like, well, you're showing us that because it's going to get used later, and if it doesn't get used later, that's an example of bad writing. Like, and this is essentially the same thing, because the salt is like a weapon to a degree, as far as like, you know, keeping demons at bay. So it's like she's totally animating with salt, which ends up being a utilized weapon later in the movie. So it's total foreshadowing.
Oh yeah, it's like the slasher foreshadowing, you know, like they're like, hey, you know, like in Friday 13th part 5, you're going to see these this row of spikes that are going to be used later on when Roy falls down on top of them. Spoiler alert for anybody. But you know, it's just, yeah, it's writing 101. Like I said, it's almost bad writing if they introduce something like that and don't use it.
Totally. Because it's like you're just creating extra shit for no reason.
Right.
There shouldn't be anything in the story that isn't directly pertaining to telling the story. So if it's just like extra random dumb shit, that's where they should be deleted scenes. So
should be cutscenes, and that's the reason why we have cutscenes.
Yep, absolutely.
But they don't do that here because, you know, hey, it was you know, I mean, it was written by Ted Nicolau, so you know he's not going to do something like that.
And I have to say, this is a very. This movie came out in, I want to say, April of 21-ish. So we were still dealing with, like, pandemic era kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It was heavy into the middle of the pandemic.
So this was part of a lineup of movies that was announced, you know, when the Deadly 10 started and then sort of tanked. They started to announce other kind of smaller projects that would be done in place of the Deadly 10. And this was announced, you know, they had, I want to say announced, like, I don't even remember, Dr. Death and Kasex and Ginger Weed Man. And then this one was announced alongside like Baby Oopsie and Piranha Women, I believe, which were just going to be very basic, simple things that they could kind of maneuver, I think, during pandemic.
Well, that's probably one of the deciding factors of having it be such a small cast, too.
One is more defining those aspects than any of the aforementioned movies as well, because this is, I have joked with you and many others who know me as a producer that I love the generic concept of, you know, X amount of people in a house with a monster kind of setup. Like, it's the super most generic, basic, cheapest way to make a horror movie and tell a story. You know, like the one I wrote and produced called Ouija Mummy is literally that exact thing. The pitch line to the director was six people in a house with a mummy, and he was like, I love it. You know, this is like, I would say four people, but the fourth person never even enters and it's not even a house, it's an apartment. Like, it's like three people in an apartment. And one of them is a monster. So it's like, it is literally the most directly movie proportionate to shooting pandemic style requirements, because there's no one, barely anyone in the movie. So
yeah, there's
very bare bones, but it's made by an actual quality filmmaker though. So it's handled well and is put together and shot and directed in a way that it still keeps it interesting. Whereas sometimes movies that have so few characters can get really boring really quick. And this one doesn't.
Yeah. And I think it also goes to mention that this movie is fucking beautifully shot.
It's very, very nice cinematography.
And again, goes to Howard Wexler right there, but like also goes to, you know, Ted Nicolau, because I think every one of his movies, at least the majority of them that I've seen, have always had exceptional cinematography. It's one of the standout things that I always, you know, look forward to in a Ted movie that I know it's always going to look top notch.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it's not top notch. The area that this movie is shot in, because of the line that Amber has, this area is really great to live in once you learn which streets to avoid. That doesn't sound too promising. Like, there's never anything that happens outside of the apartment.
You got to watch out. If you're outside, you might bump into brooding Tarzan, and he's going to, you know, want his satanic idol back.
Yeah. So, satanic Tarzan that got face-fucked by Captain Jack Sparrow. That's what I think he looks like. He looks like with that budget, like I leather jacket.
I want a movie about a satanic Tarzan now. So
there we go. We got to ride on that.
I'm on it.
All right, there we go. Now, would you agree with me that at least in the beginning, well, especially in the beginning here, and well, throughout the whole movie, Serena sends up all sorts of red flags. But like when she literally has 9 months of rent up front, so it's like, I think it's a classic case of, you know, they're for Amber and Ben, she's sending up all these red flags. She doesn't do social media, she can't have pictures taken of her, she can't, you know, give them any kind of recommendations or anything like that, or one referrals.
Thing is especially right after she moves in and all her shit's in the house. And the moment the Amber, I think, touches the idol and she like snaps. It's like, don't touch that. Like,
it's the most valuable thing that I own.
Hundreds of years old. And I'm thinking like that moments like that are when I'm like, okay, this is actually showing the budgetary restraints, because it literally looks like something that you would buy at like Spirit Halloween.
Yeah, it does look.
It reminds me of, did you ever see Amityville: A New Generation with the mirror?
Yes, I have.
Little glowing eye face thing at the top of the mirror. It kind of reminds me of that, but as like an idol.
I can see that.
The reflecting turn the rest into a body. That's what it looks like.
But I guess in this case, it doesn't matter. Money talks and bullshit walks when you got 9 months of rent up front. I mean, it doesn't matter if she's jiffy about her religious idols.
And I didn't think about this until you literally started talking about it. And I'm assuming this is what you were getting at. And if you didn't, then let me blow your mind. But I'm going to presume you knew. Rewatching it again, because this was maybe my fourth or fifth time watching this.
I think it's just my third time watching it.
I watched it like twice on streaming, and then because I'm an asshole, I have the DVD and the Blu-ray, so I watched both of those, and then I rewatched it this time. So yeah, it was like the fifth time. I rewatching it, I was like, man, usually you'd be like, I'll pay a year up front, or I'll pay 6 months. You'd pay like around length of time up front. 9 months is a really, I thought to myself, 9 months is a really odd amount to pay up front. But then when you find out the plot twist, I was like, nine months. Yeah.
9 months is there for a reason. Yes, I did. I actually caught that this time watching it.
See, I totally didn't until you literally were talking about her paying 9 months up front. And I was like, I'm so dumb.
Well, I watched it. It wasn't until I watched it the third time, or maybe it was I watched it twice for this review. So actually, that would make four times I've seen it. So it wasn't until my fourth watch too.
Thing about, you know, doing shows like this too is you kind of over, you know, we can over talk about certain aspects that might seem, you know, menial, but then, you know, you kind of catch on to things that you might not have caught on to before, or catch the hidden meaning in certain things, and you kind of go back and like, fuck, now I kind of gotta go back and want to go back and rewatch it and reevaluate it with the knowledge I now have. So
yeah, like when I heard that 9 months, and I'm just like, oh, 9 months, that's oddly specific. And I'm just like, oh yeah, she's trying to make herself a little demon baby.
Only one thing happens in 9 month periods, so
yeah.
And it's not got anything to do with a period, so.
Nope, no. Ta-dum-bum. I think my red flag, I'd have given her that 9 months back the next day when she, you know, when Amber wakes up and she's just chanting in the living room and doing what do you got there? I'm like, oh, it's a surprise. Like, nope, how about, weird lady, you don't give me a surprise and just tell me what the hell it is.
It's just me singing. I like to sing when I work.
Yeah.
Like, sounded like you were still like chanting something that the Zuni fetish doll from Trilogy of Terror would say.
Right.
Fucking evil, whatever it is. Like,
you know what is I love about this movie? It took elements. Now I'm going to talk about a movie I don't like here for a hot second. Rosemary's Baby. Don't like Rosemary's Baby. I think it's probably in my opinion, the most overrated movie I've ever seen. I find it boring. I find it utterly pretentious. But that being said, this takes elements from Rosemary's Baby and, to me, does them in an interesting way and does them much better.
Yeah, see, and then you know what I have to counter that with? You know, sometime you have to go down the road with?
What's that?
You have to figure out this, what happened to Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, maybe this is an offshoot. I mean, maybe this is.
Do you know there was a sequel to Rosemary's Baby?
Yeah, but I never watched it.
Look what's happened to Rosemary's Baby, starring Stephen McHattie.
Oh, really? Stephen McHattie was in that. Now that I didn't know, I knew it existed, but I didn't know that he was in it.
He plays
some Stephen McHattie.
He plays grown-up Rosemary's Baby. It was like a made-for-TV '70s movie. It's awful, but less irritating than Rosemary's Baby. So,
yeah, I don't want to get into a rant about why I hate Rosemary's Baby, but I just find it pretentious and just boring, and I'll leave it at that. I get hate mail at least one person telling me how much of an asshole I am every time I mention that on the air.
Yeah, whatever. Movies that have that aspect though of like people being obsessed with or trying to, you know, take over or possess or what have you, with the unborn child kind of thing. It's not a subgenre of horror. I don't know what you would call that, but you know what I mean by that. Of horror that I've ever been a fan of per se, and I would personally never have interest in making one of those kinds of movies myself. But they're not all terrible, but yeah, I don't enjoy watching Rosemary's Baby either. So
yeah, I know somebody's gonna hate me for saying this, but I think Don't Let Her In is a much better film than Rosemary's Baby, and there I said it.
Watch this any day of the week over Rosemary's Baby. So
Now I know I'm going to talk about something here because, well, one last note on the Rosemary's Baby is like the whole thing behind it of manipulating the mother and the unborn baby and everything. It's all the way right down to the secret formula, you know, green juice that she's making that Serena keeps making for Amber. It's like, it's not subtle. It's in your face, but I love it. But I got to talk about something here that I know two different things, two cameos in this movie of things that I know you don't like. It's a trope that you don't like, but I love. There's cameos by other Full Moon movies in this. And I know.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're watching movies on TV at two different points in this movie. They are watching Hideous.
Yeah.
I think at one point, and Castle Freak is the other one.
And at least they're watching two primo films. So
yeah, but I know you hate that trope. I happen to love it, so I gotta mention it every time it happens. I'm sorry.
It's very, I think it's sometimes, depending on the way it's approached, it's sometimes very lazy, tactless, like promotion for your own stuff. But it's not handled poorly in this. And actually works to a degree, because she gives the setup that she makes artwork for movies like that, so it would make sense that they'd probably, it doesn't expressly say it, but it's not unrealistic that they might actually sit down and watch some of the movies that she made artwork for.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, I feel like it was, it's not like in Demonic Toys, you know, where Shinetsky is just watching, you know, the same scene from Puppet Master 2 on perpetual loop.
Playing on repeat.
Yeah. He's watching the same 90 seconds over and over again.
In the 90s was watching Charlie Spradling's scene on repeat. So don't judge the man, okay?
Yeah, I was probably doing the same thing, so I'm not judging.
I mean, as weird as it might sound, I think I was too. So. And if you know me, it sounds weird. So.
Right, right. Oh man, what was I going to touch base on next? I always find scenes with actors playing photographers in movies always seems a bit off from what I've seen photo shoots. Yeah. It always seems very off from what reality is, because they don't ever really in this, you know, scene when Amber is taking Serena's picture because she's going to make an artwork for her gallery, and it just seems a bit off from reality. I don't know what it is, but actors playing photographers in movies is this always a weird setting for me.
The thing that it immediately made me think of was another Full Moon movie that we talked about a while back, Beach Babes from Beyond, where photographer Jacques is by the pool and he's taking the pictures of Sally's girls, and you know, Nikki Fritz is sitting there, and then she walks up and she's like, "What is going on here?" And she's acting like he's trying to shoot a porno, you know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like this, and she starts like getting really overly emphatic and physical about like the shots that are being taken, and I'm like, yeah, no.
That's not how it works.
But then, like, I also thought it was funny too, where she's like, they get the shots done, and then she's like, yeah, it might take me a few weeks, but you know, we're gonna, you know, something to the effect of, like, we're gonna have something really great. And I'm thinking, like, girl, you work from home, you ain't going nowhere. You have nothing but 24 usable hours in your day. What is gonna take you weeks? That shit should be done by next week.
That should be done in 2 days.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't get what you got going on that's going to take 2 weeks. Like, she doesn't even go on tour with her boyfriend when he leaves. Like, she stays at the fucking apartment.
Right.
Nothing. I don't know what make her think it'd take weeks on end. Get the fuck out. Like, you should have that shit done by Friday. Like,
yeah. Like, if you shot that shit on a Friday, it should be done by Monday.
A Monday morning should be like go time. Like,
right. But yeah, let's talk about Ben a little bit. Cole Pendry. He is really, as far as acting is concerned, and I don't want to dwell on it, but he's very off from everybody else. He seems like he's acting in a different movie to me.
I think that his first introduction and line of dialogue kind of sets up his entire character, because he walks up from the background and says something to the effect of, you know, like, hope you don't mind weed, because this is a pot friendly house kind of thing. And it's like, okay, well, that's, you're that kind of guy. You're the laid back stoner dude who's like way too chill and is kind of disconnected from a lot of stuff. So I was familiar with Cole Pendry before this movie. I don't remember if they were real or not, but he was in a boy band.
Oh, really? Like, for real in a boy band?
I think. It was called, I think they were called IM5, like, and they were in a web series called #Bandcamp that starred Todd Rick Hall, who's like a, you know, like a performance artist, and it was about them being sent to like boy band camp. And sang, performed songs and stuff. So I was familiar with him from that, but beyond that, I really hadn't ever seen him do anything else. So,
well, he only has 5 credits as I look at it. He was on an episode of Criminal Minds, The Band Camp, something called My Music, this, and something called Famous. So yeah, nothing that I've seen him in. Now, yeah, I wasn't saying he was necessarily a bad actor. It just seemed like he was in a different movie than everybody else.
It's funny when you say, like, feel like he's in a different movie. It makes me think of, like, for better or worse, Ghostbusters 2016. Because when I watched that movie, like, yeah, everyone hated it, whatever. But the two things that I felt were the most off about it, other than the fact that you could make a comedy movie starring, you know, Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and make it suck and make them actually seem not funny when they actually are funny, is that the McKinnon woman, what's her name? Kate McKinnon, and Thor felt like their characters felt like they were in completely different movies, because they weren't reacting to anything like normal human beings.
Right.
Two things, like ghosts taking over and attacking your city, and they're doing just weird silly shit and saying dumb crap that has nothing to do with anything. It was like they were performing a role from a completely different script.
Yeah,
so, like, what you mean by that? I don't think it was as bad as
no, it wasn't as bad, no, not that bad, but
far too chill. Like,
yeah,
very unaffected by anything to a degree. So
yeah, it's a little weird, but it doesn't ruin my enjoyment of the movie. It's just somebody had to make a comment on it. It just felt a little weird.
Yeah, and it's funny because he's not in a lot of the movie either, because he's on, like, you know, touring and shit through different parts. In one or two parts he's even just like phone, like, video.
Yeah. It's just FaceTiming people
or some shit. So it's like his role's a lot more pared down compared to the two lead actresses.
Well, and they're, to be honest, Amber and Serena are the two characters you want to watch in this movie anyway. They're the most dynamic two characters that are in the movie. So, yeah, I'd rather watch them anyways. I'd rather watch more with Elias. And speaking of Elias, you don't even know who he is until, like, 30-some-odd minutes into this movie. And again, you know, folks at home, this movie's only 62 minutes long. So you're saying, oh, he's only introduced a half hour in. Well, that's halfway through the movie. But yeah, he's just introduced as a weird dude watching his house. So it's like, yo, you got this weird dude watching your house, yo. And I do like the scene when Serena gets upset and goes out and just starts stalking him and just walking up to him and just like berating him and speaking in tongues and everything. I think that's one of the times that Amber is FaceTiming with Ben, and she keeps sticking the phone out the window to hoping that he can hear it, but she can't hear it. But she's like speaking in tongues. She's definitely speaking some other kind of language.
Yeah.
But she's always just doing this chanting and stuff, and it's always very unsettling. And speaking of unsettling, I think this is a testament to how good of an actress the lady playing Serena is, Lauren Doctor. She just can, with just a look of her eyes and the way she smiles, is so unsettling.
Yes,
it's just,
she has a very unique face, and those eyes, I think more than anything, those eyes could have just sealed the role outright.
Yeah, I would have seen a headshot from her and probably wouldn't have needed to see an audition. I'd have been like, hire her.
Without even seeing a reading up front, she would have already been at the head of the race, in my opinion, because she has such a fascinating look that you don't forget. So she was very well cast. I think she was a very, very good find for this movie. I'm not familiar if, you know, she had done other work or if this was her first film, but I think she is very, very good in this movie. She's very perfectly cast as the villain.
Well, I haven't seen her in anything else, but I've seen that she's done stuff like American Crime Story, a movie that I've actually owned that I bought at the $1.25 called The Brawler that I haven't watched. And I recognize a few of the titles, but it's just nothing that I've ever actually seen. This is the one thing I've seen her in, but I'd love to see her in more because she's just fun to watch. She's very,
yeah, I would not be upset at, you know, seeing Full Moon utilize her a bit more in something else at some point if they ever shoot more stuff in Los Angeles. So
right. But the dream within a dream, this sequence coming up when, you know, this is right after the off comes the shirt moment, which is really awkward when she mentions there's no social media because Ben comes back from his first little mini tour being gone for a week. And he goes, hey, here's a band T-shirt. And she just strips her shirt off. And they're both just kind of like, OK, and this girl's just flashing her boobs in front of us. And they both kind of look around and look, Amber and Ben do a little uncomfortably.
Which I have to say, what was his band's name?
Cockler something?
I rewound it a couple times, and I'm like, did he say the Cochlear implants?
I think it was Cochlear or Cochlear.
Something, but I'm like, I would love to have a band shirt like she put on. Like, I wonder how many of those exist that are like T-shirts to his band.
Probably two. the two they showed.
And I'm sure that Lauren Doctor probably kept one, so.
Yeah, right. But I love when Ben is in bed with Serena, or not with Serena, but well, he is shortly afterwards. He's in bed with Amber, and she pulls it. Nope, I'm tired. I have a headache. She's like, maybe in the morning. First thing in the morning.
Yeah, I love how she literally postpones their sex. She's like, nah, let's do it in the morning.
Yeah, so as I wrote down, no boom boom for Ben until Serena comes in.
Yep.
And she, you know, she gives him a good ride, for lack of a better term. And this is the first time, I think it's the first point in the movie where we get to see her in her full-on, like, demon face, which I feel is a really unique look. I wish they would have showed more of it. I kind of realized, you know, with the way they shot this movie and, you know, quick quick style as they did. You know, they probably didn't have a whole lot of setup time for doing a lot of makeup setups. Yeah. But I love the look. It's like something, like her face looks almost semi-rodent-like, but demonic at the same time, like a demon rat. It's yeah. really weird.
Very unique makeup design. I like the demon face a lot, actually. It's very effective.
The one thing I don't like, and this is just a nitpicky thing, because it just doesn't play off well, is when she kind of recoils and scampers away, and they do that kind of sped up where it almost looks like she's got kind of like the Exorcist kind of crab walk backing up. That's a little janky.
Yeah, it's like a sped up, like backwards sort of play. It's definitely weird.
Yeah, it's not horrible. It's just a little off. It's a little off. But I love in the morning when he, you know, Ben, I don't even think really realizes that what had happened was real, that he really got laid by Serena while like Amber was sleeping in bed next to him, before Serena's, you know, making some more of her smoothie concoction, and she's like, "Oh, it was fun for us to have a little secret," and it's just kind of like he freaks out and he's like, "You can't do this." He's like, you gotta help me here. I have a weakness for beautiful women." And it's like,
I love that. That was his plea. Was like,
yeah,
like he's innocent. He's like, he's a victim to his desire for like gorgeous women, and it's like she should feel sympathy for that. And I'm like, that is the weakest case of like fucking a chick behind your girlfriend's back I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's weak sauce. That's weak sauce. How about you just be fucking faithful? Or be alone. You know, that's it. And I also feel like, and maybe I'm just not the type to have one of those kind of, in air quotes here, open relationships. But, you know, Amber has very strange relationship barriers. She's like, "Hey, listen, I know, you know, I know you, I see the way you look at her. I know you fuck around when you're out on the road." And she's like, "But don't fuck her."
Yeah.
It's just really weird. It's like, "Oh, it's okay. You can, you know, you can have sex with some strange, you know, roadies and whatnot and groupies and whatnot. But no, just don't fuck our roommate." But it's really kind of like the weird timing, because I feel like it was almost like of something unspoken here that the Serena character kind of fixed to have fix something that they didn't show happening behind the scenes, to have that weird timing for his indie label stuff to come into play. Like, I feel like she was working some sort of magic to make him, to give an excuse for him to be away for a month.
Yeah, very possibly.
But this is where Elias finally comes into play. Because, you know, Elias finally gets, you know, Amber kind of mentions, you know, "I've been seeing this guy watching the house or watching the apartment." And she's like, "Oh, that's my ex." That Serena says, "You know, that's my ex that I, you know, keep mentioning that had a bad breakup from, but don't worry, he won't be a problem." But while Ben's away, you know, Serena and Amber get a little dirty action going, and get some more of the rat face demon girl stuff again, and some more of that icky, as I'm just calling it, the Soylent Green Rosemary's Baby formula. And that stuff just looked gross. It looked like pureed kale, man. I can't imagine trying to drink whatever the fuck that was. No wonder they made it out of, they just took little baby sips and didn't full on drink it, because it looked nasty.
If anyone who knows me well enough knows, like, I don't like to eat or drink anything that's green, typically, unless it's called Mountain Dew.
Yeah, that's right. You don't like anything green, do you?
I don't like fruits or vegetables, and most green shit comes out of the ground, so stuff that comes out of the ground typically, so any weird puree nasty shit like that I would not want to drink. So
would you do it for a film role, though?
To be in a Ted Nicolau movie? Absolutely.
Yeah, if it was a Ted Nicolau movie, without a doubt. If it was a Jim Wynorski movie, probably not.
There, I remember being at a film premiere back in 2012, and one of the stars was there with her very well-to-do boyfriend, and they were like doing this slick shit where they were passing their credit cards to the waiters and just like kind of slyly just covering the whole bill. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll have another, you know, whiskey sour and bring some more of this. And he was like, oh, you like pizza, right? And I'm like, yeah, I love pizza. And he's like, you're vegan like us, right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, bring me another drink. And I was just like, I just took big bites of the pizza with green peppers and onions and shit on it, and I just didn't even swallow it. I mean, I swallowed it. I would just take a bite and like take a big drink of the alcohol and just wash it down.
Like no chewing involved, just down the hatch.
I can't chew it because it's a texture thing. The moment I feel it on my tongue, it tweaks my gag reflex, and I don't care if I'm at like the fanciest restaurant in the fucking world, it's gonna shoot back out of my mouth like a machine gun. So, but I was like, oh, you're paying for shit. I'm not going to spit on your hospitality. I will not piss on your hospitality. I will eat this vegan pizza like I motherfucking love it. And I
don't. Let's just hope they don't ever listen to this podcast, because then the cat's out of the bag.
Highly doubtful.
Oh. But yeah, that green shit. Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I would do it for Ted. I would do it for Ted. Anybody else? Probably not.
One of the few directors that would be worth the sacrifice.
Probably have to have one of those whiskey sours first, just to numb myself. But anyway,
got the right alcohol. I can wash anything down. So.
Right. one of the weirdest parts of this movie. The weirdest part was when it seems very abrupt. When Serena comes out and says, stay here and don't come outside no matter what you hear. And she goes outside and is this kind of weird shit, you know, where she's talking in tongues again. And she always has an excuse. And she's like, oh, you were mishearing me. You didn't hear it that way. And like, gaslighting, bitch.
Totally.
But I love the fact when she just like, in another scene here coming up where she just touches Amber's stomach. She's like, oh, you're pregnant. Like, oops. And she's like, Ben's going to be so happy or so, you know, so upset. And it's like, you just know that what kind of movie this is. That's not Ben's baby. That's totally not Ben's baby. That is demon baby.
Sex in the movie that we see, like her and him. So
right. Yeah. She shoots them down at the one point. So it never happens. And this is at the point where I got to take note here in my notes. The Elias part of the movie is the one part that is a disappointment. Like, generally, I do really like this movie. I think it's pretty damn good. But the Elias part of the storyline, it just feels really underdeveloped. I wanted to know more about his character. I felt like there was so much there. You know, for the longest time, he's just a character, just a ghost, pretty much, just standing outside staring at the apartment until he gets into play, you know, and actually gets, you know, brought to the forefront and has a little bit of dialogue. It just seems too far underdeveloped, and that's definitely takes away from my enjoyment of the movie.
Definitely underutilized of everyone. He's the most underutilized one, and it's funny because when you finally do hear him speak to it, almost like I'm sure it is, but it almost felt like someone else's voice too.
Yeah, it did. It didn't feel like it doesn't seem like it's weird. It doesn't have like a dubbed kind of quality to it, but it just doesn't.
It's not the voice you expect to come out of his mouth.
Right, exactly.
You know who he reminded me of? He was his voice and his diction, you know, like the way he was delivering the lines.
The way that he enunciates and everything, yeah.
It's reminded me of Redfern in the first Warlock film, Richard E. Grant's character.
The demon hunter, the warlock hunter.
Witch hunter, like he very much reminded me of Redfern, because he's like, he had that very like just foreign kind of sounding drawl.
like he would have like been, even the way he was dressed didn't seem right for the time frame of the movie.
Yeah,
but that's why I feel like that part could have been a little bit better. It could have been a little bit more enhanced. It could have been a little bit more detailed, then that would have just added to my enjoyment of the movie.
Well, then maybe, you know, they can do the prequel for you, and when we shot For Christ's Sake, whenever we were out in public shooting, we had a fake working title that we used because Debbie Rashan was playing a character named Serena. We would tell people the movie's working title was Serena's Journey.
So there you go.
They could just make Serena's Journey, and it could literally document Lauren Doctor's relationship with Elias and show what their relationship is. Because there's, I think, one point where this movie does suffer is the fact that, like many of these newer Full Moon movies, they're, and I don't mean this to sound denigrating, but they're these baby lengths. You know, they're these little shorty features. This is barely an hour. It's 61 minutes. You could have really expanded a bit more and had some extra beef to what was going on and flesh some of the behind the scenes, you know, story stuff out a bit, and the characters like the Elias character and some of that. But when your movie is between 45 minutes to an hour, you don't really have time for any of that. You just got to be like ABC roll credits.
And right. I can appreciate that, but yeah, I agree with you.
At the end of the day too, I will never, no matter what it is, who the filmmaker is, who the producer is, I am not a fan of baby features. I'm really not. I have produced them. But they did not come out that way because I wanted them to. It was always circumstances out of my hands that made that happen. And I'm not a fan of that at all. Most distributors don't consider a feature unless it's like 72 minutes.
You know? Is that the going length, or the minimum going length for a feature, 72 minutes?
That tends to be standard for distribution companies. I mean, someone like this, Full Moon, can make these movies like this and distribute them because they're their own films. You know what I mean? They're Full Moon films.
Yeah, it's not like they're outside acquisitions or anything.
Yeah. So, but if you're going to a film festival, though, if you're submitting something to a film festival, or even I believe on IMDb, the standards are the same at film festivals or IMDb. If you're 45 minutes or longer, you're considered a feature. If you're less than 45 minutes, you are considered a short. So by festival / IMDb standards, these are features, but they're not a traditional feature to me. So
yeah, same. I don't consider, even if the information says otherwise, you know, the rules say otherwise, I don't consider them features.
I mean, I have produced full feature length, like 80, 90 minute long movies for a fraction of a percentage of what this movie cost. And I'm not saying that because I think I'm great, because I have legitimately produced a number of movies that I would tell you aren't necessarily things that I would say are great, you know, and that just happens. You know what I mean? It's just the way things happen sometimes. But I don't understand spending probably what some of these movies cost and only coming up with a movie that's barely an hour long. I really don't.
Right. So,
that aspect, I am not a 150% not a fan of this new Full Moon trend of baby features. I think that it just reeks of laziness, or maybe just disorganized behind the scenes politics.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan of it, but I think this is the one movie that I can say I forgive it for it.
This movie at least utilizes the runtime, and like I said before, it's never boring. It's always interesting. There's always something interesting happening. There's not a lot of action or anything because
I mean
you've got four people, so you can't even have a big body count. But it's always interesting. So I can't say that for some of the other movies that have been 32, 38, 42, 46 minutes long, you know, and I say those run times specifically picturing specific titles in my head.
I can probably figure out which ones you're talking about too.
Sure you can.
Yeah. So,
and some of those, they don't know how to use those run times. This, at least, like I've said, you know, Ted's this isn't his first day at the rodeo. He knows how to direct a quality film. So this, at least despite its short runtime, never squanders a minute.
No, so. It never does. Well, it's just like, you know, for instance, like it's like when Amber finds out she's pregnant or comes to the realization that she's pregnant. Like, she has to do a couple of information dumps here. Like, she does the first one when she's talking to Ben on the phone, where she's FaceTiming him, and she kind of comes to the realization that, you know, Serena was like, oh, it does seem like it comes upon her suddenly that, you know, after finding out she's pregnant, that Serena wants to hurt the baby. It seems like that realization comes to her kind of suddenly, but she does like do that info dump all at once. You know, they have to utilize that scene like to get the, you know, as I always say, instead of from point A to point B is from point A to point C, because, you know, you have to kind of gloss over some of the facts in order to get there. And I think that's part of the
well, you know, when you're
that short running time.
Yeah. When you're making a 61 minute movie, you don't have a lot of time to establish it. You got to leapfrog some shit.
Yeah. Get,
so, you know,
but yeah, I mean, when Amber finally comes to that realization, isn't it before that scene or after that scene when she has a confrontation with Elias, when she sees Elias watching her outside the house again? That was after that scene, wasn't it?
I believe so. One thing I have to interject too is watching it this time too, I'd never really caught on to, because I told you I never really ever remember the ending of this movie beyond just like the salt barriers and shit. I always forget it, but I legitimately did not remember the moment where Serena talks about how, yeah, she'd love to maybe have a kid one day, but she wouldn't want to carry it herself. She'd want a surrogate. And I'm like, oh, more foreshadowing right there.
Yeah, well, as I always like to say, message, you know.
Yeah, like, message delivered.
Like, right. But... yeah, but the what I was aiming at was this is the first time when I noticed, like, it says that Elias wants that Spirit Halloween statuette back, right? And she's like, she stole it from me. Yeah. She's like, she stole it from me. If you return it, then balance will be restored. And salt kind of comes back into play again. You know, he tells her, you know, spread salt at all your doorways, at all entranceways, and you'll be protected. And it's like, okay, salt is finally coming back into play. So that foreshadowing, you know, again, good writing. But like, I never understood, and I still don't understand who Elias really was supposed to be. Was he somebody like Redfern, you know, like you were saying, from Warlock? Was he a hunter, or was he another demon, or was he a jilted lover of Serena's? It still doesn't make sense to me who he is.
Yeah, it's kept very, very on the DL. Like,
yeah, 'cause I
don't really understand who he was or what their relationship was or what the power of the idol is or any of that. Then that's the thing. I think that's the thing. Like, it's okay to make a short feature like this and kind of leave things ambiguous like that, but it really begs for a sequel or something to expand the story and, you know, flesh that world out. This is a good example of something that would be a good movie to continue the story in, because there's plenty of room where you could actually evolve the proceedings for a sequel. But, you know, whether we'll get it is questionable.
Yeah, I mean, we might, you know, but like, as it says in the Full Moon universe, everything has potential for a sequel except for Sea People.
And Murderbot. So
one would hope,
you know. I do think that they are, you know, there is going to be some future Ted collabs, obviously, at Full Moon. Obviously, they're not all good. The next one's not going to be like another subspecies level project. Likely, though, I figure probably his next movie for them will be something more akin to a project like this again, kind of a smaller scale, you know, something stateside, you know.
Well, yeah, because shooting over in Romania or Serbia is, you know, going to be a lot more expensive than shooting in L.A. or even like for Ohio, for that matter.
So I'm sure whatever his next film for them is, if and when that happens, it'll be something smaller and more, you know, reasonably budgeted than Subspecies 5. So it would be something probably more along the lines of this movie again. So I'd love for it to be a sequel to this one. Who knows if it would be, but
you know. I'd be for it. I'd be all for it.
Yeah, I'd be okay with it.
And then I could ask them for they could beg my forgiveness for killing Elias just as we got to know him. And that's exactly what happens. Serena stabs the shit out of him with that fucking dagger.
He's that giant dagger. I mean, he's a big. It takes a big dagger to kill him. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that thing is basically like a small sword, but, you know.
She compared it at one point. She says that it looks like something out of Lord of the Rings.
Right, yeah, it does. It does look like something out of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But, The salt comes in. I feel like salt ought to be a fifth character in this movie, because salt comes in and tries to save the day, but not quite, because when Amber tries to spread it across the threshold of the elevator, she misses about a 6-inch little line. So Serena manages to get in, but Serena can't pass in through the bedroom because she managed to complete the line of salt from end to end. So salt does kind of doesn't really save the day, but it like postpones the end of the day for it. I mean, but like Serena drops the veneer quick and goes into that manic chanting. She's like, oh, you know, at first she's like, oh, she's like, what are you doing? What's going on? You know, it's just me. And then like as soon as she sees the salt, she just goes, you fucking cunt. Get me in. And it's like, okay, the veneer dropped really freaking quickly.
You know what's funny is the moment that she's trapped outside and I'm like, ah, she can't pass through. And I'm thinking like, well, Amber's in an enclosed room though. She should just like, she's a demon. She should just bust through the fucking wall. And then I was like, oh yeah, budget.
Yeah. I was just going to say, as soon as you said that, budget.
Yeah, if that was me, I'd be like, fuck your line of salt. I'd just rip straight through the wall and be like, you can't get away from me. But then I'm like, oh yeah, there's no money to rip through the wall.
Yeah, I don't got that kind of budget for this movie. Yeah,
her boyfriend to come back and fucking like fuck the day up. So
yeah, and of course he believes Serena, and he's like, oh, you know, like listen, it's just us. I'll get the key to the key that is kept in a random drawer in the middle of her office that just happens to be next to the computer where Amber was working on those that photo shoot she did of Serena, and her picture now tells the truth that she's a demon.
Which I guess explains why she doesn't like her picture taken, because when you take her picture, you end up capturing her true form.
That's what I got. It was never really spoken in the movie, but I figured that's what they were aiming for.
At least, I mean, because it didn't look that way to begin with, but I, you know, the proof's in the pudding once you, you know, and the proof, a proof being the picture too, and that like, you know, you've captured her eventually, like the truth will come to light and her image turned to that, because that's what she really was. That's kind of how I processed that.
Yeah, and that's how I took it too. I mean, it makes sense to me. But yeah, when Ben opens that door, he is the weakest link, and I don't mean the actor, I just mean the character of Ben. He's the weak link.
He's a total dingus, dude, because he like goes there and opens the door and he's just like, he's literally just standing on the wrong side of the salt line and is like pleading with her, like, and I'm thinking like, dude, like, all you have to do is just take a step fucking forward. Like, why are you not entering the room at her? You're not being held at bay by the salt too, you know what I mean?
Right
Like, why are you standing there literally as she's looming over you, like ready to like monster out and fucking like do something to you? Like, you're so dumb.
Yeah, giving you those crazy Serena eyes going on, and like you don't know something's going on. You already kind of saw her as a demon already a couple of times. I mean, put two and two together, buddy. Like you said, he's kind of a dingus.
Yeah, I just didn't get it, but you know, whatever.
But this is the second problem I have with this movie, and I know I'm nitpicking. And yeah, and Ted, if you ever listen to this, I'm sorry, I'm not picking on you because I love the movie, but I'm just a nitpicky bastard, and that's all I can say. Is this like the ending is resolved a little too quickly? Like Serena comes in, they have a little bit of a fight and a scuffle. She says something about it being sacrifice and nourishment for the child. And then she sacrifices herself and her life essence, or, you know, her spirit goes into Amber.
Yeah.
And it all happens very quickly. And Ben, you know, I want to get to yell at his character. And I think I said it out loud. I'm like, did you not? And when he says to the Amber, what's wrong with you? I'm like, did you not just see what happened, dude? Did you not just see this demon die, kill herself? And watch her life essence go into your girlfriend. And it's just like, did you not see what happened? I'm like, because I know we did, the audience did, and you should have seen it too.
And it's, and you know, that whole ending happens so quick, and then it's just like, boom, roll credits. That I have to say, you know, I remember being a kid and I used to get Cine Fantastique magazine, and they had this great issue that came out that had the artwork for Shadow Over Innsmouth, the classic unmade Full Moon film.
I think I still have that magazine because it's got like the woman with gills on the front of it.
Yep, that's the artwork for Shadow Over Innsmouth, the unproduced Stuart Gordon epic, and it. Inside of it, it was like a comprehensive full moon issue. They had one of their on staff reviewers, John Thonan, reviewed every movie in the entire full moon library. And they had big pieces on new stuff. Like they had big articles on Castle Freak and the Josh Kirby series. And now I'm blanking out. What were we talking about?
Oh, the abrupt ending.
Yes, there. You know, in one of John Thonan's reviews, he says, and I think it might have been in reference to something like Curse of the Puppet Master or something, where he said that it had what in my mind always stuck as the sequel ready non-ending.
Right. Right.
Exactly what this movie has is a classic sequel-ready non-ending, because it builds up to a peak and then it just stops. So it's leaving you thirsty for more, but then instead of properly ending and having, it's like the movie decides to skip the resolution and it just stops in the middle of the action.
Right, yeah, because the last line we get is Amber with her eyes kind of glowing all weird, and she says, well, I'm eating for two now.
And then chew the skin off Serena's face.
Yeah, because they're like, well, we have to get rid of this body, and I'm like, okay, I guess she's going to eat her now? I mean, it's just like, I'm feeding for two now, boom, done. But
what was the demon? Why does it want a baby? There's a lot of unanswered questions that it would work for a sequel, you know, so
that's why I kind of hope you know, if they ever do a sequel and they answer some of those unanswered questions, I will come up on my rating, which I'm not going to blow what my rating is just yet, but we'll hear in just a few minutes. But I will come up on my rating if they fix that.
But
that being said, that's the abrupt end of our movie. I do like the fact in the credits Serena pops up as the little rat demon, scampers across the screen, and stamps.
The full moon stamp.
Yeah, the full moon stamp on it. I did like that. That was like as close as we're ever going to get to a full moon bumper, you know, post-credit scene.
Yeah.
But that being said, that is the end of our movie. And this is the movie that I thought, you know, I will have to say this. I was mad at this movie the first time I watched it, because I felt like this was going to be made instead of Subspecies 5, because I felt like, you know, the pandemic hit. They can't go overseas and shoot. Everything got stopped. Subspecies 5 is never going to happen, so we got this instead. So I went into this movie already preconceived in my head that I wanted to hate it. But then I watched it, and I really, really like it. I really like it, and I like it even more now that I've watched it a couple of times, because, like, you know, the revelation of, you know, like her wanting to be a surrogate, like you mentioned, Dustin. And, you know, and like I had mentioned before about like the 9 months rent thing, you know, and that being a very specific number. It's very bare bones as a movie is, but it's very intelligent and never feels dumbed down. And I like that about it. But that being said, let's go ahead and get off into our final thoughts and ratings. You know how things go around here. Guests go first. So have at it, man.
Yeah, you know, this... like I said, it was a weird period for Full Moon because they were really moving into, you know, the big leagues with the Deadly 10 stuff. And we were getting these crazy budgeted movies like Ouija's and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, people might not look at it as budgeted, but like, you know, like Female and Cosmic Crush and stuff, movies that are legit like building sets and like just doing these really complex things. And you know, Subspecies 5 was coming, and then the pandemic took a big shit on all of it. And you know, I was concerned to a degree at the time because we were gonna just get all these smaller films, but of them this ended up being, I think, one of the better films from those plans. Some of them didn't quite happen as quick as they thought they would, either because some of the movies that were announced at the same time as this movie took a little bit longer to get off the ground and did some director swaps and things. But this one stayed genuinely a Ted movie, and it's a solid movie. It's got a vibe to it. It's, you know, it's very atmospheric. I think that Serena is a really interesting, compelling villain. And Amber, Kelly Curran, was that her name? She's a good actress, too. She was a very interesting actress. I wouldn't mind seeing either one of them.
Yeah, interesting character.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing either one of them pop up in more Full Moon movies, whether it be a sequel to this or, you know, something different. They were both very, very good in their roles, and the location really helped amp things up. I do, like we said, I think that the Elias stuff was kind of a bit of missed opportunity stuff, and based on that and the short runtime, which no matter what, for a lot of these movies, the short runtime is always gonna affect my mood on the movie, no matter how good I think it is, because I just feel like these short movies are not, and not to say that I don't think Ted was, but like I feel like a short movie's not trying hard enough, you know?
Right.
Like I said, I don't know what the behind the scenes politics are on making these short features, but I don't like it. And I think that they don't necessarily help build Full Moon back up to a brand that makes us remember the Paramount era stuff. Subspecies 5, absolutely. But, you know, that's not to say that this isn't a bad film, though, because it's not. This is actually a really solid film.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, that's just unfortunately 61 minutes long, and as much as the ending kind of irks me, I'm at peace with getting a sequel-ready non-ending, and sadly I'm a bit more at peace with getting movies that have sequel-ready non-endings that never get the sequel, or if they do, it's just like, you know, like a Puppet Master style, you know. You know, this one ended on this really awful note. We'll make a sequel. It's going to be about something completely different, though. You know,
so something completely unrelated.
Yeah, so I'm used to there being no resolution, sadly. It's kind of just like a unique earmark to a lot of this kind of content for me. But it's a solid movie. It is something that I think is a, like, I'm going to make a weird comparison. Like when I watch a Chainsaw Massacre movie, okay, there's, you know, X amount, however, 8, 9 of those movies. We all know what the best Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie is, right?
Right.
But that one's obviously the great, the perfect one. It should be rated higher. I would still rather watch Part 3, personally, because I find it more fun. I connect to it more. But Part 1 is dark, and it's not what I would all necessarily say is fun to watch. So
yeah, it's not like Part 2 is a fun movie.
Yeah, 2 and 3 have completely different vibes. Yeah. So as opposed to one or, God forbid, you know, four. But so, like, subspecies 1, 2, 3, 5, those are Texas Chainsaw 1 to me. And, you know, Ted was, I think, a sound recordist or a sound editor or something.
Yeah, he was on part one.
Ugly. So weird that I would, in retrospect now, make that comparison. But, like, this subspecies movies minus part four are, like, part one of Chainsaw. This is a really good movie, but it's not something that I would rush back to watch all the time. I don't think that it's necessarily fun, but, and I don't mean that as a slam. Do you get what I mean by that?
Right. It's not a happy-go-lucky, fun, you know, chuckly kind of movie.
Yeah, not a party movie. It's not something that, like, I get really amped up and, you know.
It's not something that, yeah, like, it's not a party movie that you would, like, hey, I'm going to show you a movie from Ted Nicolaou's, you know, filmography to have fun at a party. You're going to show them, you know, Bad Channels.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel like the rating that I'll give is a bit lower than I feel like the movie deserves, but in my mind, I'm gonna give it a 7.5. And, you know, that in my mind, like, grade school mentality, that feels like I'm giving it a C. But it's a really good movie. It really is. It's just not something that I'm gonna always vibe with and want to go back and have on repeat a lot. Like, I can watch Subspecies, like, 2 and 3 and 5. I can watch them motherfuckers all the time. They get better with every viewing. And this is still a solid movie. It's just, it's not something I'm going to rush back to watch regularly. And I hate that runtime. But everything else, it is a very effective, well-made, well-directed, well-acted movie that is definitely, I think, something that stands out as a more serious kind of adult horror piece in the Full Moon Library. It's not something silly about, like, little creatures or fucking dolls and, you know, shit. Like, it's very adult horror, I think.
Yeah. It's grown-up horror.
Yeah. Is it Castle Freak? No. You know, is it Subspecies 2? No. But it's damn good, though. It really is.
Yeah. You know, I kind of been wiffle-waffling between giving it a 7 or an 8.
And I bounced back and forth between a 7.5 and an 8, but I feel like 7.5 is where I feel at the moment.
You know, I'll match your 7.5. I'll match it because I don't want to give it as low as a 7, and I don't want to give it as high as an 8. So I will match your 7.5 for pretty much the same reason, you know, the reasons. I would probably rate this a lot higher if you won't hear me say this much, but with a short movie like this, I think it definitely needs to be said. It could be 20 minutes longer and, absolutely, you know, 20, 30 minutes longer, and I'd be happy with it. Most movies these days are, you know, 2-3 hours long. You know, some movies are just way too long. So most of the time, you know, I'm the guy always saying, shorten your movie up, shorten it, you know.
And we know, we see what Ted did with the 61 existing minutes. You know what I mean? So, you know, an extra 15, 20 minutes wouldn't have been squandered content.
No, it wouldn't have been just bullshit.
It just comes down to, I feel like a movie like this, they just need to put on an extra. I mean, I don't know, maybe in my mind, you need to just add an extra day of production. But maybe for Full Moon, that's like an extra 2 days or something in slightly different budget levels. But
Yeah. Let's just say an extra day or two. Yeah,
definitely.
But yeah, you know, I think if it had been 15, 20 minutes longer, and if they would expand it upon the story of, I want to know a little bit more about Serena. I definitely want to know more about Elias. So I'll hold out that maybe one day we will get a prequel or a sequel, you know, or some sort of spinoff or a continuation of it. And if they did, and they answer some of the unanswered questions that I have about the Elias and Serena characters, I would have come up on this, because then it would show to me that they had a plan all along. So, hey, you know, maybe, you know, with future Ted and Charlie, you know, collaborations, maybe we'll get that, you know, time will only tell. But I still feel like you said, a 7.5 is not a bad grade. You know, I feel like anything that's a 5 or below is a bad grade.
Sometimes, just giving a movie like this a 7.5, I feel like I'm giving it less than what it deserves. That's why I feel like I have to try and defend and kind of explain myself why I would give it that. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Same. Well, like you said, you know, we're doing it on the, you know, like school grading levels, you know, a 7.5, a 75% is like, you know, a C. And it's definitely not like a C grade film. It's not even a B grade film. I mean, it's definitely A grade. It's enjoyable.
It's a very slick movie. It really is.
And again, I got to say, hats off to Howard Wexler. He made this movie look really fucking beautiful. I think really, besides Ted, Howard Wexler is the MVP here for just shooting this movie and making it look really, really, really good.
Two ways you can really up your game, especially in low budget filmmaking, and you know this is, you know, you can have the best actors, you can have the best director, but if you have bad camera work or bad sound, none of that other shit means anything.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you have star power, it doesn't matter who you got in it or who's behind the camera, who's, you know, who's directing or writing. If it looks bad, and God forbid if it fucking sounds bad,
Good camera work really adds a whole other aesthetic to the movie. And the camera work is really good.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And, you know, and again, I think someone else we got to mention here is Richard Band. Richard Band, you know, who came in to do the music, the soundtrack was really good. The incidental music was really, really good in this.
Absolutely.
But I think we could stick a pin in this one for the afternoon. We have, again, two shows in a row, talked for at least 1.5 times the length of the movie that we were reviewing.
If anything, this show taught me one thing. I know what I expect as my Christmas gift this year, Cameron, from you. I expect a bowl of gemstones and peacock feathers.
and weird herbal essences kind of shit going on with it.
They can make my room smell nice with like amber rocks and salt and peacock feathers to usher in new beginnings.
there you go. Well, I mean, on the last year I gifted you an arcade laser disc, so I guess this year that's what you're gonna get.
Yeah, or either you can get me the a replica of the Spirit Halloween idol.
If I was going to spend money on anything, I'm going to spend money on that Bloodstone replica.
That too. I'll take that.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to have one as soon as they come out. I'm sure.
Oof, no comment.
I don't know how much they're going to be charging for that thing, but it's probably going to, I wouldn't say going to be too much, but it's going to be enough to make my pocketbook go ouch.
I would hope less than that damn Baby Oopsie replica. Let's put it that way, because at least the Bloodstone don't need to fucking talk. So,
right.
Maybe that thing can light the fuck up, and that's it. So,
yeah, that's it. That's all it's got to do. It's got to look like an animated snow cone. Oh, but buddy, I want to thank you again for doing two of these shows pretty much back-to-back. You know, we've done two of these close together, so now we got a couple more short ones in the bank, and I appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely not a problem. It's my pleasure as always.
All right. And folks at home, thank you as always for listening. And if you want to help us out, you know how you can do it. You can rate, review, subscribe, share our links, comment on our links, and hey, even possibly send us a message. Maybe give us some notes or some suggestions on what you want to hear our take on next. We always appreciate your input. But you have been listening to us talk and discuss and dissect Don't Let Her In from 2021. And as always, thank you for listening, folks.
Ciao.
Jesus. Amber? Amber, what's going on? Are you okay?